and welcome to another episode of the Menswear Style Podcast. I'm your host, Pete Brooker. On this episode, I'm going to talk to Vaz Brand, co-founder and chief growth officer at Nordgreen. And I'm going to pull a short clip here from the website, which you can find, by the way, at www.nordgreen.com. Nordgreen is a watch brand which blends Scandinavian minimalism with fine craftsmanship of a leading Danish designer who has previously worked with Bang & Olufsen and other major design brands. Based in Copenhagen, Nordgreen created more than a mere watch. Each of our timepieces has a unique story, inspired by local design for sustainability and warm generosity. So there you go. And that interview with Vaz to come, I really enjoyed it. We talk about what makes a sustainable watch, what it takes to get a watch brand off the ground, and sometimes just taking a leap of faith can really pay off. But before we get to Vaz, don't forget to check out the show notes at Menswear Style, www.menswearstyle.co.uk, and we're on the social at Menswear Style. And if you want to tell us about your brand and your journey, you can email the show at info@menswearstyle.co.uk. Okay. Let's get to it. This is a good one, and I hope you enjoy it. Here is that interview with Vaz Brand, co-founder and chief growth officer at Nordgreen. Well, it's my great pleasure to introduce Vaz Brand, co-founder and chief growth officer at Nordgreen. I do hope I got your name right, Vaz. How are you doing today?
more or less. Thank you very much. I'm doing very well, thanks. I'm doing very well.
Awesome, Vaz. Please, for the uninitiated, you just gave me a thumbnail sketch of you off mic, but if we can do it for the audience, and let us know a bit more about Nordgreen, please.
Sure. So, my name is Vasily Brand, and I'm one of the co-founders of Nordgreen, which is a Danish designer watch company that we founded back in 2017. So basically, it's a brand that has two main foundations, which is Danish design and sustainability, which is also reflected in the name Nordgreen. Nordgreen in itself is actually a Danish surname, so people are called Jacob Nordgreen and Simon Nordgreen and whatever in Denmark. But when you read it in English, you see two words. You see Nord and you see green. And that's kind of the two pillars that exactly represents the brand, as I mentioned before. Nord in Danish means, we pronounce it Nord, and that means north, which represents our Nordic heritage and our Nordic design story. And green, the second part of the name, then represents the sustainability part of it, as just mentioned before. And it's also reflected now in our logo. We have a little logo mark on top of the word mark, which is kind of, it looks like a leaf, which represents the sustainability, but it's also an arrow pointing to the north. So,
very cool.
So kind of the name tells the story of the brand, and that's kind of the overarching story of it.
Nice.
Positioning of it. Yeah.
And talk to me a little bit how you got this off the ground and the people that are involved, the concept to market, please. Tell us a little bit about the journey.
Yeah, so we started the company again back in 2017. I lived in the UK back then. Now I'm in Copenhagen, Denmark, but living in the UK, working for a company called The Hut Group, which is kind of an e-commerce incubator that has a lot of brands within health, fashion, and beauty. Before that, I lived in a couple of countries all around Europe. But the initial idea of building the company actually came all the way back in 2010 when I studied at the university, where my very good friend Pascal and I studied together and talked about building a company at some point.
This is in Berlin.
This was in Denmark actually. So that was when I started my university journey. But I lived in Berlin later on, doing a master's degree in 2012-13. We talked about starting a company together, and we just never did it. We continued our studies, and then we finished our studies, and we both got professional jobs. He worked in McKinsey and in a consulting business, and I worked in the UK at the Hut Group. And in 2017, we just said, you know what, our careers might be quite interesting and very intellectually stimulating, but we've just always had this dream of starting our own thing. And in 2017, we decided to quit our jobs. And as part of that journey, Pascal then one of the co-founders talked to one of his colleagues called Christian about him quitting to start this journey. And then Christian decided to also, he was also in the process of quitting actually to start his own company. And we decided to just merge the whole thing. And that's how the three of us got together and built this company.
Wow. And so did you all simultaneously quit your jobs and take a leap of faith with this? Or was there already backing and was there already kind of some financial security with Nord Green at the time?
There was pure leap of faith. There was no backing. There was no financial security.
Wow.
We all had our savings, and we said, you know what, let's just dedicate everything we have to this and then cross our fingers and hope for the best. We had a clear idea of what we wanted to do. We all had the same passion and the same enthusiasm for the project, and we decided to just go for it. Then, of course, early on, we looked for the initial funding, because building a company which you want to grow really fast requires capital. So we did start that journey after we kicked off the project, but we didn't secure any funding until a couple of months into the business.
Wow. Now, Faz, you'll have to take me, because if I said to my girlfriend that I'm going to quit everything that I'm doing and I've got a great idea, I think if you stern, there'll be blood and feathers in this house. I'll tell you about it. So what were the reactions of the people around you when you decided to make this choice?
I mean, they were like, you know, they thought I was stupid.
Right.
I'm not stupid, of course. They, you know, it was a big risk. Everyone involved in this project, we had really kind of exciting jobs, very kind of comfortable salaries, and we're happy with what we were doing. But, you know, the three of us just had these butterflies in our stomach that we just wanted to start a company at some point. And I mean, of course, a lot of people just thought us cool, you know, just giving up everything just to go for it. And that was the feeling that we had. We didn't look back. We didn't look negative on it. We kept our heads high and just went for it.
And
I mean, again, we all had kind of in the back of our minds that, you know, it is a big risk. And if we fail after a year or two or three, you know, we probably lost a lot, both financially and also career wise. We could have grown elsewhere. But I mean, to us, you know, the worst thing that can happen was really to go back and get a job again.
Well, I mean, still, it's quite the leap of faith, I should say. And was it always
for sure.
So the three of you got together and you said you wanted to work on a thing. Was it always going to be watches in the back of your mind? Or were there other options in the hat, other projects that you could have gone down?
Money is all around us, and we think about it more than almost every other aspect of our lives. But how can we make more of it, and what's our drive for building wealth beyond just the numbers in our bank account? Join us on the Make More podcast as our host Matt Heslin brings to you a dynamic lineup of experts in the world of investing, business, health, and beyond. Together, they unpack the secrets to not just surviving, but thriving in today's economy. It's about more than just wealth. It's about crafting life experiences, seizing opportunities, and building a legacy. Subscribe now to the Make More with Matt Heslin podcast and join us every week for new expert insights and inspiration.
I mean, there's been a lot of projects. I mean, if you look all the way back to when we studied together, Pascal and I, and even, I mean, before that, I did a lot of small projects back in elementary school and high school. So, you know, I've always had this entrepreneurial kind of gene in me. But if we go back to the university time where we really discussed this on a serious basis, yeah, there's been a lot of projects that we've had in mind that we wanted to launch, ranging from vegan nutrition to, we had an idea regarding a fashion company, and then the watches came up, and we then decided to at the end to move on with the watches, because that was where we had kind of the biggest passion. It's funny because both Pascal, myself, and Christian, we with our first bonus and our first watch and our first jobs, we bought a watch kind of. So the passion has always been there, and the interest has always been there. And then when we dived a bit deeper into it, we also concluded that it was actually also a pretty good business opportunity. So passion combined with opportunity was the perfect fit for us. And that's why we decided to move into that direction.
Interesting. And I think all entrepreneurs will have different ideas. It's just a discipline, isn't it, of focusing and nailing down one idea that they can work on. I'm not calling myself an entrepreneur by any means, but I've had a dozen of ideas that I've never been able to get off the launch pad. And I think everyone's had their idea of launching a t-shirt brand at one stage. So there's always some guys that have got boxes and boxes of t-shirts before print on demand came on, and it's all taking up storage in your dad's garage, right? I remember doing one on a concept called con artists. And I got my mum to draw all of these different famous con artists during the years, like the guy that sold the Eiffel Tower 3 times. So we had like the picture of him on the front of the t-shirt, and the idea of it being a pencil sketch was where the artist came in. Anyway, never got off the ground. Let's talk about Nord Green instead. That's more interesting. Talk to me a bit about the sustainability aspect. So when I was on the website, which people can find, by the way, nordgreen.com, there seems to be a real big subtext of the sustainability infused into the brand, you know, entrenched into the philosophy. Maybe you can tell me what a sustainable watch is and how you make this a sustainable watch.
Absolutely. So it's not just about creating a sustainable watch. It's about creating a sustainable concept. So in general, we are positioned as a Danish design company or a Scandinavian design company. And especially Danish design companies, I mean, you can't create a Danish design company without thinking sustainability first. If you look at any historical successful Danish designer brands, whether it's brands doing furniture, you know, tables, or chairs, or couches, or kitchen equipment, or speakers, they're always made of really, really good materials. It's really, really high quality. So it's products that really, really last a lifetime. And that's sustainability in its essence, right? Durability equals sustainability. The less waste you have, the more sustainable the product basically is, you can say, right? So Danish designer brands are notoriously sustainable. So we knew from the beginning that if we wanted to do a Danish design company, we just have to be sustainable. We have to think sustainability first in the product. But we also wanted to take it to the next level and go beyond the product itself to then be the most sustainable watch brand out there, both within the Nordic design kind of umbrella, but also on an overall level. And I mean, you can do this in a lot of ways. Nord Green's vision is to pioneer the next wave of responsible Danish design. When we say next wave, it's because Danish design, just as mentioned, is responsible or sustainable. We want to bring it to the next wave or pioneer the next wave by go beyond the product. And so you can make a sustainable product by, of course, using sustainable materials. You can have sustainable, you know, have sustainable manufacturing practices and procedures, which we of course do, but you can also do everything around it in a very sustainable and responsible way. In the case of Nord Green, as an example, we actually started off back in the days with a giving back program, which was a responsibility program that allowed our customers to donate to a cause of their choice. So when people bought a watch, they could go to our website, go into the giving back program.
Oh, that's then into cool.
Then enter the serial number, which is on the backside of the watch, to then enter kind of the sustainability portal we've built, or responsibility portal, to then donate to one of 3 causes of their choice for free. It's a part of the purchasing price. And since the beginning, we've worked with 3 partners really closely to support health, education, and environment. And that's the 3 causes that consumers can then choose. The first cause, health, is basically to provide 2 months of clean water to a family in the Central African Republic. Education is to provide 1 month of free education to a family to a child in India. And the environmental part of it is to preserve 50 square meters of rainforest in Latin America. And we're doing this with 3 partners who we've been working with since the very beginning. And this program is still available, and that's how we kicked off the responsibility journey. And then since that, we've of course expanded, right? So our packaging is fully sustainable. The box is made of FSC certified cardboard, but the inner part of it is made of upcycled plastic bottles. So it's made of felt, which is made of upcycled plastic bottles in our case. So the box also gives this fully sustainable kind of experience. Usually when you buy, especially watches and jewelry, you get boxes with this foam, this black foam that looks very luxurious and expensive, but it is just poisonous to the planet. So kind of, it might look good and feel nice, but it's actually not very good, at least for the environment. And, you know, so we turned that around, and we all of our shipping partners, they offset their CO2 footprint. We are as an office CO2 neutral, you know, just things like that. So we go way beyond the product itself to make sure that we are sustainable and responsible across all avenues of the business, but also the supply chain as a whole.
Brilliant. Awesome. Well, I love that, the charity element of that, because so many times when I see on websites, and this isn't to denigrate anyone else's ideas, but you'll have the option of donating, say, 10% to a charity. And it's often the charity that the founder's chosen, or some, that it might be a charity that is not even close to your heart, but you feel like you're giving it away to some kind of black hole or an abyss somewhere, you know, which is all well and good for that charity, but it's not really something that motivates you to buy anything. But having the optionality and also seeing where it's going, I think that's a really big, nice big bonus, good USP.
Absolutely. I mean, the biggest problem is transparency in many cases, right? Brands, they say that a percentage, a certain level of the purchase goes to a certain cause, but what it actually is, you know, it's not always clarified. So in our case, we are completely tangible in regards to what actually is going to happen. And then we also give the customer the choice to choose a cause that's close to his heart. And when the interesting part is also that when you then select a partner and you do the donation, then you can always log in again with that certain number to then follow the progression of that partner. So we have kind of a landing page, and the story will always be connected to that watch, which means if you sell it in the future to somebody, whatever, as secondhand, then that person can then log in to see what the first cost customer chose to donate to as part of his purchase. So there's always a store connected to the watch.
That's nice.
Cool,
yeah. That's nice. It reminds me of when I sponsored a tiger called Rocky. What was it? One of these Greenpeace things. But it was really cool. They kept on sending me little letters on behalf of Rocky. Like, oh, thanks for the £10, Pete. I've had a nice lump of steak today. Tomorrow I'll go out in the hills and do this, that, and that. I was like, oh, that's really cool. I get to see where my £10 getting postcards from different parts of South Africa.
Exactly. I mean, that's continuously updating, right? And that's just brilliant. Yeah. Even if you have a humorous element to it.
It's all part of the journey. Yeah. Baz, maybe tell me about some of the designs and what, other than the sustainable element, what's actually going on within the watch that makes this different, or perhaps distinguishes this watch from other watches in the market right now?
So, I mean, the most important part for us in the beginning of the journey was to, again, position ourselves as a true Danish design company. And that meant we had to hire a very, very good designer, because neither myself or Pascal Christian were designers. We are just entrepreneurs who want to build a, you know, beautiful watch company that is also, of course, responsible. So we had to recruit a designer, and we wanted to really get kind of the best of the best. So we reached out to all the top Nordic designers in the world, and ended up basically creating a very close partnership with Jacob Wagner, who is also, he was one of the lead designers and at Bang & Olufsen, as an example. If you know, Bang & Olufsen is the Danish speaker company that's very, very exclusive, produces very high quality products. And he basically designed the entire headphone series, as an example, which, you know, I just see no matter where I go in the world, whether I'm traveling in Germany or Japan or the US or even in South America, I just see those headphones everywhere. So, you know, he really makes kind of classical product or designs that really last a lifetime. He's worked a lot in the fashion, sorry, not fashion industry, but in the furniture industry, doing furniture for huge brands like Cappellini and Moroso, and you know the Italian brands, but has also done Danish design brands such as Montaigne and Hay and other big ones, and coming out of Denmark. So kind of the design story is very complete in our end, I think, in the sense that you actually buy a watch made by Jacob Wagner, which is not just a standard designer. He's one of the best designers in the world, even having a fixed exhibition at MoMA in New York City as well. So that's kind of the main thing. You really buy a genuine Danish design product, but at a price point that's not different to, you know, all the others out there, you know, within the kind of fashion and design segment. We're not priced any higher, and yet you still get the design store, and you also get the sustainability of it. From a product perspective, Jacob has designed four designs so far: the Native, the Philosopher, the Infinity, and the Pioneer. And we're launching a new model just in a week, which is exclusively for women, called the Unica, which is very exciting. But the others have already been launched and have been live more or less since the beginning. Native, Philosopher, and Infinity were launched from the very first day, and then the Pioneer came on a bit more than a year later. And the first three models, sorry, Colin.
No, sorry to interrupt. I was going to ask, was the Pioneer the one that won the Red Dot Award?
Correct. Yeah, the Pioneer won the Red Dot Design Award in 2020, which was very exciting.
Really, so big deal, right? I mean, I've been to the Red Dot Museum in Singapore, and for people that have never heard of it, it's purely an exhibition based on design. So you can go down there and see robots conducting orchestras, playing table tennis against each other. It's almost like you're just walking into the future. And I just saw the Red Dot Award, and I was like, wow, that is pretty big news, considering, with all due respect, you've only been going for a couple of years to even be considered for this, is let alone win it. I think it was pretty special. So congrats.
It was very special, and we're very proud of that. That was a Pioneer design, which was our latest design that was launched. And the Pioneer is the first kind of gender specific watch we've had. That was kind of, it was designed for men, but of course women can still buy it and wear it if they want a bit more chunky watch. But the first three designs we created, the Native, Philosopher, and Infinity, they actually all unisex.
Right.
They are sold to both genders. We've moved in Infinity more towards women because we could just see that the vast majority who bought it were actually women. But the other, the Philosopher and the Native, they're purely unisex. And even though they are unisex, the expressions of the watches can still be very kind of gender specific, because we have these quick release strap functionalities, which means you can easily quick release the straps and change them with others. So a lot of our customers, they buy, you know, 2, 3, 5 straps. So they can have a lot of different expressions when they swap them for the watch case itself. So we can see that, you know, a lot of the women, they buy, you know, the mesh bands, or they buy the 5-piece links, all they like, where a lot of men, they buy the leather, they buy the rubber, they buy the nylon. And the watches just look very, very different depending on which strap you're wearing. And, you know, and then of course, women, they're more inclined to buy the rose gold and the gold cases, and the males, they're more inclined to buy the silver and the gunmetal. We have 4 different case colors. So even though the watches, some of them are unisex, they can still be kind of tailored to the individual genders.
That's interesting. Can you put, I saw a lot of your watches and your watch straps, I should say, on the website. If I had my own watch strap, like my own kind of NATO one that I just took off my Amiga James Bond watch, for example, can I switch that on to one of the Pioneers? Does it work that way?
If it's the right size, then yes, we do have completely standard case widths. So our locks, they are, you know, they have a 20 they're 20 millimeter in distance, or 18 or 16. So it's very, you know, they can really be used across most. Together with most standard straps out there. So if you have a 20 millimeter strap for your Omega watch, you can certainly use it on our Pioneer. Yes.
I should say I don't actually own the Omega watch, but you know, I could always dream.
They are nice though. They are very nice.
What was the watch that you bought when you said that you and your co-founder friend bought a watch together at the same time? I'm curious, which one was it?
It was actually an old Omega Seamaster from, it was the one that was in, I think it was James Bond, Golden Eye. So from that movie. So you know they changed over time. So I bought an old one from
the old old 300. Nice.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So I think they're much cooler than the new ones. There's a bit more story to them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you've got one of the most famous Danish people in the Bond films, right? Mads Mikkelsen rocks up in Casino Royale. He blew that out of the water, by the way.
Absolutely. Yeah. He's amazing. He would be, I would love to have him as an ambassador for Nordgreen. We'll get that one day.
It'll be perfect. Or or Viggo Mortensen. I'm sorry.
Viggo Mortensen, he's great. And Nicolai Coster-Waldau as well. I mean, those three, they are, some of our prime.
Do a 1, 2, 3 on that. I was crazily Rolodexing through my mind then for famous Norwegian people. My brain just went into this huge spasm mode.
Yeah. So, we do work more and more with Danish kind of actors and celebrities and launching collab designs with them. We're actually doing this on a global scale for all of our core markets. But as an example, just recently we just launched a watch together with I guess he's the most popular musician in Denmark. He's called Christopher. He's also very big in Asia, where we also have a quite strong presence. Right. We did a watch with him. It was the Norgreen X Christopher collection, created in partnership with the World Child Cancer Organization. So as an example, for every watch we're selling off that collection, we donate one round of chemotherapy to a child in a developing country. Wow. So with these collabs that we are, you know, developing together with the A-list actors, musicians, or whatever it is, always have a partner connect to them as well, that goes beyond the giving back program we talked about earlier. So just an example of something we have done with celebrities in the past.
That's very cool. Faz, I'm going to switch gears a little bit. Maybe we talked about celebrities and potential great brand ambassadors that you have. How much attention do you pay to, say, social media influencers? And, you know, obviously with a lot of startup watch brands, I think they turn to social media to leverage some traffic and gain attention for their brand. Do you actually have the same approach? Do you look at social media in that way? Is it something that you can utilize?
Yeah, certainly. We are very present on social media, both through advertising, organic posting, but also through influencers. I would say influencers is something, you know, it's a marketing channel, right? But it's a channel that has changed substantially in the past 5 to 7 years. If you build a company back in 2013, 2014, and kind of leveraged the influencer marketing channel, it was just a gold rush, right? Right. I mean, I've heard of brands who worked with one influencer and based on, you know, a few posts, they sold more than 50,000 units, which is just ridiculous. Wow. So you had a lot of brands back then that just grew like crazy because they just used influencers. And back then, everything was very organic because influencers were actually really excited about getting free products. So when they talked about it in their posting and all that, it was very organic. It was very truthful. It was very natural, right? And the followers, they bought it because one of their favorite influencers were wearing it, and it had a high level of trustworthiness. But I think in the past, especially in the past just 3 to 4 years, the industry has changed a lot and become very much commercialized, right? Back in the days, you could get huge influencers posting for you just for a free product, and now you have to pay 10 grand for it every time if you want a big one, or even more, right? We've had quotes of $50,000 for a post, and even more than that. So wow. It's gotten really expensive, but the trust between the influencers and the followers has also decreased because the followers just knows that most of these things are commercial nowadays, and because of that, it's just not organic in the same way as it was in the past. So
get Mads Mikkelsen cheaper than 50 grand a post, surely. Lars van Trier can do it for 10K. I know that much.
Lars van Trier, he would be interesting to use.
50 grand, cheapers. I'm missing
out. It's ridiculous, right? So nowadays, it's just become really expensive. And that's why we do, of course, use it. And we use the channel heavily. But we don't see it as a very strong conversion channel. We don't see a lot of transaction coming through. I mean, compared to back in the days where you at least got like 5, 10, or 20 sales per like influencer you use, nowadays it's just the numbers are often very much lower, especially in our case because our products are a bit more expensive, right? You pay more than $200 for every product, and usually people just want to do a bit more research and maybe even see it in stores before buying. So we use the channel, but it's more for brand awareness, just to keep the watch out there, make sure people, they see it in other people's wrists through social media channels, but we don't use it as kind of a strong sales channel.
Right. Okay. And as you're our direct consumer, I don't believe you've got any bricks and mortar at this stage.
You know, we do, but not our own stores. It's through third party stores. Yeah.
I see. How do you try and gain exposure for the website and the e-commerce store? What are your main tools outside of the social media?
So, I mean, we use all the traditional marketing channels. So just as you mentioned, social media, both organic and paid, but we'd also use search in different countries. Obviously, Google search advertising is the biggest in the world, but we also use Yahoo in certain markets where Yahoo has a good presence, and even Bing. So we do search marketing all over the place. We do a lot of shopping. So as an example, Google shopping, where you can see the price on the top of just below, on the top of the page when you search for something. We use quite a bit of display advertising. So as an example, when you go read the news on BBC or any other big media in the UK, you often see a few ads here and there following you. We also use that a lot. We use email marketing to kind of continuously reaching out to our existing email subscribers and past customers. We're getting really strong when it comes to search engine optimization as well. So people also find us organically depending on what they search for. But now we're really ranking high in a lot of keywords within the watch industry. Primarily keywords that are, of course, relevant to us because that's what we want to rank for, but also a lot of kind of long tail keywords that doesn't have the direct link to a Danish design watch company, but still kind of to a watch company, and then we still kind of show up. So we're getting quite strong on that as well. We're quite strong on affiliate marketing as well. So using a few different affiliate networks all around the world. So, you know, different comparison platforms, they use us and things like that. We work a lot with blogs, magazines, both online and offline, but primarily online because we are D2C, e-com driven. We push PR quite a bit, did that especially the first 2 years. The past year we haven't that much, but we will continue with it, especially end of year when we hopefully had a very good result. So we explore the full spectrum of marketing, and we really do it also on the local level. So, you know, the advertising we do for customers in South Korea are very different to the advertising we do for customers in the US. What we do for the US is actually very different to Germany, even though you might not think that Germans and Americans are maybe on overall level that different culturally. So we really localize everything that we can, both from a marketing perspective, but also from a website perspective.
Baz, I feel like we could do another hour on how you manage to pull the strings for all this and the sort of research and the way you have to market this product. But it's a great watch. Thanks for talking so much about it and giving us so many colorful answers. And best of luck with the launch next week. Perhaps it's already out by the time we get this podcast out, more than likely. But people can check out the watches at nordgreen.com and also on Instagram, Nordgreen Official, so that people can tag along and follow the journey there. But it's been great to talk to you. Thanks so much for taking time out your Sunday.
Thanks for inviting me. It was a pleasure.
Well, how about that? I could have talked to Vaz for hours, mainly about the films of Mads Mikkelsen and Viggo Mortensen, but another podcast, another time. In the meantime, make sure you're checking out the good guys. Head over to nordgreen.com and treat yourself or your loved one to a good-looking design-led watch. Thanks for tuning in. If you like what you're hearing, do leave us a review on your smartphones. It helps our egos. And until next time.